We're now on our fifth week of the series Paraclesis, Journeying Together. Today's sermon is called Strong in the Broken Places, and this is taken from Ernest Hemingway's A Farewell to Arms, where he writes, "The world breaks everyone, and afterwards many are strong at the broken places." As we've looked at the Paraclesis series, we have considered how life can be seen as a journey. We've looked at caring, loving, the journey of life, and last week we were considering the choices we make. Choices in direction. And today, no matter what has happened in the past, we can choose life. Trevor Partridge tells us, there are broken places on the journey of life. And if we can journey with others at their broken places, we can bring strength and healing. These broken places can remain a weakness, or they can become a strength. Romans 15:1-2 says, "We who are strong ought to bear with the failings of the weak, and not to please ourselves. Each of us should please our neighbours for their good, to build them up." If you're following the journals, you'll see on page 100 that we come to another Paraclesis word, paracleo, which means to comfort. 1 Thessalonians 5:11 says, "So comfort each other and make each other strong." Today, the word comfort generally means to console, but the word comes from the Latin, come with, and fort, from fortis, fortitude or strength. So it means coming alongside, bringing strength to build up, repair and restore, imparting energy and vitality into the soul, enabling people to rebuild and move on with their lives from a position of strength, not weakness. So we can provide strength for the journeys of others. Galatians 6:2 says, "Bear one another's burdens and so fulfil the law of Christ." Our very presence is being part of the strengthening process. By just being there and journeying with someone, we can help them through broken circumstances to find healing. We must always aim at those things that bring peace and that help strengthen one another, it says in Romans 14:19. Today our gospel account is of the woman with the infirm spirit, which is found in Luke 13. From these verses we can see that the woman had a pitiful existence. Now here is a descendant of Abraham. Satan has kept her in this condition for 18 years, Luke says. A descendant or a daughter of Abraham meant she was a temple attender. This Sabbath morning Jesus was speaking and she made her way to the temple. Hers was a pitiful existence. She was bent double, her hands almost touching the floor. She hobbled into the temple. As Jesus began speaking, his eyes fell upon her. He called her forward, and she shuffled away to the front. In the NIV, verse 11 says, "And the woman that was there had been crippled by a spirit for 18 years. She was bent over and could not straighten up at all. She was deformed, distorted, disabled bundle of humanity. She could not straighten up and her spine had fused and knocked her into that position. It had probably started 18 years before with back pain. And in order to alleviate and ease the pain, the sufferer slowly leans forward until eventually doubled over. It was a kind of arthritic condition that deteriorates over years. And she was trapped in this physical condition." That verse in the New King James Version reads, "There was a woman who had a spirit of infirmity 18 years. Luke, who wrote the account, was a doctor, and he observes that she not only had a curvature of the spine, but was also a disabled spirit, a spirit of infirmity. This word infirmity is an interesting word. The Greek for strength is sethos, and for infirmity is asthesos, which is the opposite. When you put an A in front of a Greek word, it turns a positive to a negative, or the opposite. For example, putting an A in front of theist, you have atheist. Athos means weakness or lacking strength. She had an external deformity, but an internal infirmity. A physical affliction with a spiritual cause. Some suggest this woman was demon-possessed. However, the structure of the Greek narrative doesn't suggest that. Jesus always spoke to demons. Here, he spoke to the woman. Jesus never laid his hands on demon-possessed, but he laid his hands on this woman. Demons always reacted in the presence of Jesus, but there was no reaction or outburst here. Furthermore, the Greek word for demon possession is not found in this passage. Verse 16 does say, should not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has kept bound for 18 years, be set free on the Sabbath day from what bound her? Jesus said that this woman was bound by Satan. The Greek word means to bind or to tie or tether. Then Jesus said she was set free from her infirmity. The word he used means to loose bonds that tie, to untie, free and release. These words are used medically to talk about binding wounds with bandages and removing the same bandages. Job 7 reads, human life is a struggle, isn't it? It's a life sentence to hard labour. Often when journeying with people, we find something has wounded and damaged their spirit. Through life, they've wrapped bandages around them, all kinds of bandages. It might be through what they pursue in life or how they relate to others in life that they try to deal with their own wounds. As you listen to their story, recognise that underneath, often seeping through these bandages, is an open sore, a wounded spirit. As we explore and understand their journey, we begin to find a debilitating, broken place. Hebrews 4:15 says, we have a high priest, Jesus, who is touched with the feelings of our infirmity. Not touched by our infirmities, but with the feelings, because infirmities always damage feelings. Psychosomatic is a fascinating word that comes from two Greek words, psych for the soul and soma for the body. Psychosomatic impacts is to do with how the spirit has direct impact on the body. Our spirits have a significant impact on our body. In None of These Diseases by Dr. Ian McKellen and Dr. David E. Stern, they talk about holding things in our spirit like anger, guilt, hatred, fear, stress, resentment, and bitterness. That these actually release chemicals into the blood stream and into the nervous system. Conveying them to our spirit, from our spirit into our bodies, prompting physiological reactions in the body. There are no inbuilt shock absorbers in the human spirit. God never created us for those things. They are alien to the human spirit. It can't contain them. They're an unnatural imposition, so the wounded spirit throws them off into the body. That's what psychosomatic defines. Something crippling had happened in this woman's spirit that had impacted her body. Dr. Luke links her or outer deformity to an inner infirmity, to a spiritual origin rather than an organic or physical cause. a condition came to define her. The J.B. Phillips translation puts it, a woman who for 18 years had been ill with some psychological cause, was bent double and was quite unable to straighten herself. Jeremiah 6:13-14 says, from the prophet, even to the priest, everyone deals falsely. They have also healed the hurt of my people slightly, saying, peace, peace, where there is no peace. The word for shalom means wellness, wholeness, completeness. Here's the indictment by Jeremiah that the house of God, the message of the wholeness, has not been declared, not delivered. They had said, peace, peace, but only healed the hurt slightly. The Good News translation puts it, they act as if my people's wounds were only scratches. All is well, they say, when all is not well. Human beings are like icebergs, only revealing the tip, what they want us to see. Often other things are going on beneath the waterline. Isaiah, speaking of Jesus, said, he shall not judge by the sight of his eyes, nor decide by the hearing of his ears. And in Matthew 23, Jesus says to the Pharisees, you are like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. Dr. Luke saw this woman's condition, but saw beneath the waterline. Life is never as simple as it seems. Human experience always runs deep. In the light of this, and in order to come alongside and journey with others, we need to recognise all behaviour is caused. We do what we do because something in us motivates us and determines our behaviour. Our lives are always multi-layered. Journeying with people is beginning to recognise that beneath behaviours there is often a wounded spirit. We also need to acknowledge the broken places. Stuff happens on the journey. People's spirits get fractured, damaged and broken on the anvil of life. Here are some broken places you may have experienced or seen in others. Broken relationships. Most, if not all, non-organic issues, that is, non-physical issues, have a strong relational component, broken at the point of relationship. Family, marriage, peers, friends, church, colleagues. People hurt. That's a fact of life. Broken dreams. We often live with promises, goals and expectations, thinking life will turn out at a particular way. But sometimes promises are broken by people, never by God. Goals are unmet and expectations unrealised. People's hopes and aspirations may be dashed and dreams shattered as a result. Broken heart. This may be caused by the loss of a loved one, a miscarriage, childlessness, unrequited love, a painful breakup, being betrayed by marriage, divorce, abortion. These cause the spirit to be wounded by sorrow, grief and sadness. A broken image. Identity and self-image may be broken and marred by others through psychological, verbal or emotional impact. For example, bullying, humiliation, ridicule or rejection by others, be they parents, peers, teachers or siblings. This causes a badly damaged sense of self-worth and low self-esteem. Broken systems. In Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 13, we read, my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountains of living waters, and viewed themselves cisterns broken that can hold no water. A cistern is a large tank cut into the rock to hold water, and often the rock cracked and the water seeped out. After a while it would drain away, leaving mud and sludge at the bottom. This is a picture of our lives when we try to satisfy our deepest longings with anything other than God. Rather than drinking fresh water, we find ourselves wallowing in mud and sludge. How many cisterns have people drunk from that don't truly satisfy? Possessions, money, pornography, status, idol worship. These may promise to satisfy, but they're failing water holes. And when we drink from them, wallowing in the mud and dregs, we will be broken morally, losing our moral compass, lacking integrity, virtue and purity. These are broken systems that will never satisfy. And finally, a broken body, bodily afflictions, physical and congenital disease and deformity, disability, physical abuse, sexual abuse, long-standing severe illness and incurable disease and injury. Some causes go on unrecognised beneath the waterline. A broken place produces a wounded spirit. A wounded spirit produces a pool of pain. The common denominator threading through a broken place is pain. How we deal with a pool of pain determines our journey. The pain in a wounded spirit is a feeling. The pain of disappointment, loss, humiliation, shame, rejection, guilt or reject can be debilitating. People wrap bandages around their lives, trying to ease the pain through all different kinds of life patterns. We think we can heal pain, but it's the wounded spirit that needs healing, and only then will the pain dissolve. Proverbs 18 says, "The spirit of a man will sustain him in sickness, but who can bear a broken spirit?" The answer is no one. We were never created to bear a wounded spirit. God created us with a whole spirit. A wounded spirit is as likely with a woman in the temple. Our behaviours relate to that pool of pain. In becoming strong at the broken places, for a wound not to remain, it needs to become a scar. And for it to become a scar, healing has to take place. Many people live with an open wound, and no one has journeyed with them to help them process the pain of the wound until it becomes a scar. By coming alongside others and working through those hurts below the waterline, we can help them heal and unwind the bandages. But they can only do so by applying God's grace. Be careful that none of you fails to respond to the grace which God gives. For if he does, there will very easily spring up in him a bitter spirit that can not only be bad in itself, but can also be the poison of lives of many others. That's the Phillips translation of Hebrews 12, verse 15. Notice it says that if we don't respond to God's grace, a wounded spirit poisons our life and those around us. A bitter spirit is toxic, and if we don't deal with it, we become a toxic person. In 2 Corinthians 12, Paul describes a thorn in his flesh as an infirmity. A thorn in the flesh means a wound, pain, poison in our system. He wanted to be free from pain. He asking God to deliver him 3 times. And each time God said, "My grace is sufficient for you." After the 3rd time, instead of responding to the pain of his thorn, he embraces the grace of God. His wounded spirit becomes a grace scar. Having received grace, he declares, "Therefore I take the pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distress for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong." That's in 2 Corinthians, first time. When a root of bitterness takes hold, we become victims of a broken place. If we live as victims and remain victims, we will victimise others, becoming an agent of pain. It works like this. I get hurt, so I hurt you, to make you feel the same pain as me. Make you as miserable as I am. Someone criticises me, so I criticise back. I project my bitterness onto them. I am wounded, so I will wound you and make you pay for my pain. You find this as you journey with people. And this is not to condemn them. God only knows they have suffered in their lives. We're there to support them and love them, bringing comfort, strength, and the grace of God. Grace is the antidote to a bitter poison in the soul. Forgiveness is a key part of grace. Colossians 3 verse 13 says, bearing with one another and forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so also you must do. We can choose to respond to his grace because he's promised to supply a corresponding source of grace for every circumstance in life. Forgiving as we have been forgiven sets us free from the past, heals our wounds and releases us from pain. We can help people think through God's forgiveness so that, strengthened by this, they can forgive us. Forgiveness is choosing to let go and choosing to embrace grace. Unforgiveness and bitterness incarcerates. It never rehabilitates. Holding bitterness and resentment in our spirit is like drinking poison and then waiting for the other person to die. Did you know that a pearl comes from pain? When a piece of grit gets into an oyster shell and wounds it, it releases a soft liquid that covers round the piece of grit, slowly hardening, becoming smooth and shiny, a pearl. That's what grace and forgiveness of God is like. Forgiveness turns us into a great grace pearl and a wound into a grace scar. In life, we either react to the problem or respond to God's grace. We either become bitter or better. We are left with either a sore or a scar. Back in the temple, Jesus called a woman forward. Places his hand upon her, his hand of grace and mercy, love and healing, and something breaks in her side, her spirit. Suddenly, instead of looking at those beautiful feet of Jesus, she lifts her head and looks into the most wonderful eyes she's ever seen before in her life. Lift your eyes and gaze at the cross. There are wounds there. Medics tell us there are 5 types of wounds: bruising, piercing, tearing, grazing, and penetration by a sharp blade. On the cross, Jesus suffered and took all of those types of wounds into his own body. Isaiah 53:5 says, he was wounded for our transgressions, he was bruised for our iniquities. The risen Christ is a wounded healer, with scars to show for it. Scars on his back where he was lacerated. Scars on his brow where the crown of thorns was forced on his head. A scar on his side where the Roman soldiers stabbed his side and pierced him. Scars on his hands and his feet. The message of the cross is that God not only saves us and forgives our sin, but he heals the wounded soul. But who can bear a broken spirit? Gospel responds, only Jesus can. He bore all of life's trauma on our behalf. He paid the ultimate price for our freedom and healing, overcoming sin, death, hell, and the devil once and for all. When we come to him, recognising our pain that comes from our wounds, willing to take off our bandages, letting the wounded healer touch us, then we can come alongside, journey with others, helping them to take their bandages off, allowing the healing to flow to them. This is paraclesis at work, coming alongside with comfort and the strength of God, making them strong for the broken places. Jesus saw this pitiful woman. He called her. He spoke words of freedom to her spirit and loosed her. He touched her, pouring strength into that pitiful body and healing those disabled wounds. She stood straight, and they immediately praised God in the temple. She walked tall and journeyed out of the temple that morning, a transformed woman. Not only a woman who had been physically healed, but whose spirit was released and made whole through the power of Jesus. I pray that you will have experienced the journey together with others. May we be a church that reaches beyond these four walls and into the brokenness in the streets around us, coming alongside people and leading them to the healer. His name is Jesus.